You know, it's actually a beautiful thing. There was a word that came in the prayer meeting at the start about God being our dad, how he parents us and loves us. And singing that song, Abba, it's actually speaking of the fact that the most awesome, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-present creator of the universe actually tells us that he's our dad. It doesn't take away from how magnificent he is. It emphasizes the beauty of his love and his grace that would be his son's. And in fact, this morning, I actually want to share a little bit about it's the Father heart of God for us and what he wants for us. And for those of us who are parents, you probably will be able to understand a little bit of what I'm saying. I mean, I've got my two boys. They're nearly grown up now. And you find that, you know, when you look back as an older parent and you look at your kids, you realize that it was often chaos to get to where you are now. I look at my kids and I think, you know, parenting, it's not easy. They don't always do what you want them to, how you want them to, when they want, in fact, rarely. And in fact, some of you are probably going through that chaos right now. I mean, you've got young parents here, especially when you've got just one or two kids, you're trying to figure it all out, trying to navigate the chaos. It probably gets a little bit easier to get into a groove when you've got, I don't know, six. But isn't it true that as you're a parent and as you go through, it's hard to parent your kids? And sometimes people have this idea. They say, "Ugh, you know, kids, they're so innocent. They're so pure. These are the people that have never been to a second birthday party where the kids are competing to see how far they can flush the towels down the toilet." Was that just my kids? No. It wasn't my kids. I won't say whose it was, no one here. But even though you're going through this chaos, eventually the good news is you do pop out the other side, wiser, more experienced. You are this picture of wisdom just dripping from you, and now you get to dispense all that wisdom to all the other young parents who are desperate to have your wisdom, right? But seriously though, as a parent, you get to realize that kids are inherently self-involved. They are. Hear me here. I'm not trying to put anything on them. They're kids, and it's not what you can expect, but kids are inherently selfish. They are. You're born selfish. You're not born thinking, how can I make my mother's life a joy? You're not. You're born, and you know what you want, and you know what you need, and you're going to demand to get it, normally very vocally, at 2 a.m. in the morning. See, for kids, as far as they're concerned, the world revolves around them. What matters is what they want, and nothing else. So I would say that our purpose as a parent is actually how to train our children, often, on how to consider other people. As a parent, if you don't do that, if you don't teach them how to actually become an integral part of your family, how to draw close, how to love others, how to think of others before themselves, as a parent, if you don't teach your children that, you end up with spoiled, narcissistic kids. And if you look around in the world today, that's kind of what you see a lot of. Spoiled, narcissistic kids. Why am I talking about this? Because this morning, I want to talk a little bit about God's heart for us as a father. He actually wants to train us, to draw us close into family, and to teach us how not to be selfish. Because, can I be really honest? And if this makes you uncomfortable and you think that's unfair, Dan, well, tough, because I've got the microphone. Honestly, I think that if all of us here left to our own devices, given free rein to do what we liked, I think we'd all be pretty selfish. I think if God didn't have a call on our lives, I think would be pretty selfish. We'd think about ourselves first. Inside all of us, I do think that there's a little bit of that little child which never truly went away. So I've got 3 points this morning. But before I get to my 3 points, I want to ask you what Steve spoke about last week. ABC. You remember what that was? I'm hearing lots of mumbling, but you're not very sure about it. It started with an A. A was? There we go. Abide in God. So abiding in God, that's about working out your salvation, finding God, abiding in God. The B was belonging. Belonging to family, joining a community of believers, doing life with them. And then C was contribute. Contributing to the community, using your gifts, your talents to bless others. So ABC, it's a journey of maturity. So the idea is that one has to happen before the next. If you're not abiding in God, if you're not saved, if you don't know what it is to know Jesus as your Father, it's going to be very hard to be in a community with everyone else who believes firmly and holds on to the truth that Jesus is their Father. It's going to be hard to belong, okay? So firstly, you've got to know where you are in God. Then, once you know where you are in God, then you're in a good place to belong to a community of believers that love God like you do, because we're family. We're blood family, the real blood, the blood of Jesus. And then finally, contribute. So once you're abiding in God, once you're belonging to the family, you're then in a safe, structured place where you can actually contribute. And you can bring each other closer to Jesus. And this is actually what Roland has been massaging into us over the last few weeks. And Stephen did so beautifully last week. It's this progression. You know, we've been talking about maturity. Who remembers Roland's message on milk drinkers? You know? That's the heart of it. So who can forget Roland's message on milk drinkers? So why is it, if we've heard these messages so much, and we know the truth of it, we do. Like, I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong here, nothing that you guys have heard over the last 6 weeks, you've gone, really? How incredible. I mean, I didn't know that I was supposed to become a mature Christian. Now I know it. I didn't before. You all know it. We all know it. We all know that we're supposed to abide, belong, and contribute. We all know it. Yet somehow, many of us struggle to get to that place. Stephen touched on a little bit of it last week. I want to dig a little bit deeper because, quite simply, I think God, as our Father, is desperate for us to come to maturity. In the same way that we as parents want our kids to grow into maturity, I think that's the heart of our Father. I don't think Jesus came to the cross, died, saved us, redeemed us, just to leave us there. He did that so that we can enter a relationship with him and grow up in him as part of the church. So this morning, I want to look at what gets in the way of us actually walking in those ABCs. So, I want to just put a little bit of a caveat before I dig into my 3 points, because I do think that it's important just to bring perspective. This morning, I'm going to talk quite hard about some stuff, because I think that God is wanting to encourage us into more, okay? I'm going to be talking a lot about how we should not look to ourselves, but to others. I just want to put a balance on it, and I'm not going to come back to this. I'm going to say this once, but I just want to put a balance on before I go to the rest. That does not mean, anything I say this morning does not mean that God does not care about our looking after ourselves, because we're his sons and daughters, and he loves us, and he's for us. You've heard the talks probably many times about the different tanks that we have. Not tanks, boom, boom, boom. Tanks as in emotional tanks and the physical tank and the spiritual tank and the mental tank, okay? The thing is that we need to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves and we're helping other people take care of us. But the point that I want to get at this morning is this. It's all very good. And people tell you it's important to look after your things. Emotionally, how full is your tank? How are you refilling your spiritual tank, right? All that's good. And I don't want to neglect that, okay? But the point this morning is not to talk so much about that. But when was the last time you looked at somebody else to try and figure out which of their tanks was empty and needed filling? When was the last time you spoke to a friend and they said, how are you doing spiritually? Where do you need filling? What can I do to help you? Do you understand? So I'm not saying neglect the self-care. I'm not saying that. God, I do believe, cares about us, every single one of us, passionately. But this morning, the point I'm getting at is how are we looking after the care of those around us? Is that good? Okay, I just wanted to put a balance. All right, so my 3 points this morning, I'm going to use an example from the Bible. I'm going to use a particular story that I used just a few weeks ago because I like it. And I think it's full of truths. I'm going to talk about someone in the Bible who had their own version of the ABC. They had their own version of the ABC. It wasn't abide, belong, contribute. It was an alternative one, not a good one. So the ABC that this person used is not a recommendation for life. It's an observation of this was their ABC. Okay? Their ABC was not abide, belong, and contribute. It was avoid, backtrack, and criticize. Avoid, backtrack, and criticize. This is the alternative ABC. And this is the one that I think actually often stops us from walking in the ABC that God wants us to. And as our Father, he says, this is what I want. Why are you doing that? I want to put a highlight on it. So let's start with avoid. Avoid. This is my 3 points. The first one is avoid. So I'm going to go to Jonah chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. Jonah chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. It says this, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. Now, the real A we should be doing is abiding. And that thing of abiding is finding where we are in God and growing in God. How often have you heard people saying things like, oh, I'm struggling to hear God's voice right now. I wish he'd speak to me. Jonah did not have that problem. God spoke to Jonah, undeniably. He knew what he was asked to do. The abiding wasn't the problem here. He was a prophet. He heard God. The problem was that even though he heard God speak, he didn't want to hear. Jonah 1 verse 3 says this, but Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Now, in hindsight, I don't know about you, but I read this, you know, many years later, and it's almost funny. Like, you got on a boat to run away from God. Like, you hear the voice of God, you really think that in Tarshish, God's not going to find you. That's actually, can I call it what it is? Isn't that a little bit childish? It is, it's immature. He was avoiding what God wanted him to do because he didn't want to hear it. See, the truth is, when it comes to abiding, is that God isn't far away. And if we really, truly abide in him, he doesn't make it hard. Jesus did not come and sacrifice himself for us to make himself hard to find. He didn't. He wanted to make himself easy to find. It's hard to lay down our lives, yes, but it's not hard to find him. Psalm 145, 17 to 19 says this. It says, the Lord is righteous in all his ways and faithful in all he does. The Lord is near to all who call on him, to all who call on him in truth. He fulfills the desires of those who fear him. He hears their cry and saves them. Or Jeremiah 29, 12 to 13, God speaking to the Israelites, but this does talk of God's hearts to all of us. It says this, then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Do you get this? God is not hard to find. Abiding itself is not, or should not be that hard, because God is easy to find. The problem is that we are just like our toddlers. See, because our toddlers, it's not that they don't hear what we ask. don't play with that kitchen knife. Okay, that is from one of my kids. The issue is not that they don't hear us. The issue is them obeying it, doing what we ask. And I want to suggest to you that we all know what we're called to do when we abide. Love God, love others, share the good news of the gospel. If we set our hearts on those things and obeying God and following him, I don't think abiding is a problem. But when God talks, the reality is we often don't want to hear. He says things when we're spending time with him, he'll ask something of us which we don't like. He calls us to change, to submit, to be accountable, to love the unlovable, to sacrifice something. And the problem is when God asks us to do those things, even though we're trying to abide and he says, okay, do this, draw close to me by doing this. And we go, did God really say that? I'm just not sure. I'm feeling like it's going to cost me this. And would God really ask that of me? And so we rationalize rather than react to his calling. And gradually what we do, just like a toddler, we avoid. We start doing our own thing. And then this strangest thing happens. As we start disobeying, we start to lose our desire for our intimacy with God. We start to spend less time with God in our quiet times. We start to avoid meeting with people and sharing about Jesus. It's not that we think we don't belong to him. We know that we belong to him. But what happens is we gradually drift further and further away from the abiding because we're avoiding. And eventually, we put ourselves in the storm. Is it because of God that we aren't abiding in him? Or is it because of us? It's us. God is easy to be found. We're just not good to obey. Jonah 1, 4 to 10 says this. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, "How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he'll take notice of us, so we'll not perish." Then the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity." They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, "Tell us, who's responsible for making all this trouble for us? What kind of work do you do? Where do you come from? What's your country? From what people are you?" He answered, "I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." This terrified them and asked, "What have you done?" They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. Jonah, yeah, he was the prince of avoidance. He knew who he belonged to. He just didn't want to do it. You know what the beautiful thing is in this story? Just like any good parent who loves his kids, God is faithful and chases him down. Sometimes when you're in the storm, it's just because God is calling you back to abide. If you're in the storm, there can be many reasons. But ask God, are you in the storm because you've been avoiding? And does he want to bring you back? That brings us to the second point in the ABC. It's not belonging, it's backtracking. To backtrack. So the funny thing about belonging is this. With belonging, you don't truly belong until you belong. That probably sounded clever in my head than it really was. Let me explain. So last week, Stephen spoke about people who come into church, and they say they love the sense of community that we have, and they say about how amazing it is to be part of this church. They've never felt this way in a church before. You're all so welcoming, and there's just such an amazing feeling, and you're like, oh, it's just beautiful. Like, they've just, oh, it's amazing. 6 months later, we never see them again. Why? Were they lying about what they experienced? No, I don't think so. I give people more credit than that. I think they genuinely experience what it means to be pulled into family. It's real. So why do they move on? Why did they only stick for 6 months and then disappear? Is it offense? Is it hurt? It could be. It's not usually. If you bump into folks that have been in the church for a few months and floated off, and you know, you do, you bump into them places, you chat to them, you say, you know, where are you at now? You know, what happened? Why did you move on? They normally, in my experience, talk about things like how, oh, I just didn't feel like it was home. Or, no, we felt God leading us on somewhere else, which is usually nowhere else. But there's something that just didn't stick. And if they did pick up an offense, you know, blaming others, blaming leaders, the strange thing is this. The church is still here. We still love Jesus. We still love each other. We still build family. So if we're still trying to do our best to love Jesus, imperfectly, but we're doing our best, was it the state of our hearts that got in the way, or was it the state of theirs? You see, distance, usually, is not caused by others pulling away from us. Because there's a lot of people. Distance is normally because we pull away from them. In Jonah's case, it was a very literal thing. So he didn't find himself in the best company. It was a bunch of sailors that worshipped a whole bunch of different gods. So this analogy is a little bit wobbly. But it is true that the sailors tried to look out for him. They actually did. They cared about him. But the problem wasn't the sailors. It was Jonah. Jonah 1, 11 to 13 says this. It says, the sea was getting rougher and rougher. So they asked him, what should we do to make the sea calm down for us? Pick me up and throw me into the sea, he replied, and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault this great storm has come upon you. Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they couldn't because the sea grew even wilder than before. So I don't want to take this too far. I'm not suggesting that we all take our comm members who are struggling and go throw them into the sea and wait for a whale. That's not the point. But the point is this. Belonging is not around the people around us. I can assure you that in this church, if you want to get slotted in, I can guarantee that everyone around you loves you, is for you, wants the best for you, wants to bring you closer to Jesus. I'm not saying they never make mistakes, but that's their heart. The problem is that a time will come when we have to make a decision. You see, to be part of family, you have to surrender something of your own independence. And you have to embrace the family that you're part of. And I think every one of us here, sitting here, you're either going to have to make this decision or you've already made it. And you know this is true in your heart. You had that moment where you thought, I'm either in or I'm not. I either give myself to this family or I walk away from this family. Because you can't be half in, half out. That's not belonging. I'm sorry, but you don't belong half in. You don't half belong. You have a decision to make. It's going to cost you your life, as you know it. For some people, they feel like the life they have is already worth too much to them. So they jump ship, just like Jonah. For others, we give ourselves to the family and we belong. God put us in family. God's heart for us is for us to belong. It's for us to give ourselves to that thing. Fortunately for God, fortunately for Jonah, God provided a way of salvation quite literally. So Jonah was swallowed by the whale. You all know that story. You all knew it in kids' church. And this actually became a picture of the path that Jesus would walk 800 years later. So Matthew 12:40 says this. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of a huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. You see, the beautiful thing is this. God was so determined that Jonah was going to belong that he actually went through the chaos and used Jonah as an example of the way in which we can belong through Jesus. That is the Father's heart. He's so desperate for us to belong. He's so desperate to see what Jesus, for to show us what Jesus did and what it means for belonging. He put Jonah through that. See, God had a purpose for Jonah. Even though Jonah had avoided, he had backtracked, he tried to avoid being part of something, God was going to deliver him to Nineveh. And this brings me on to my third alternative C, which is criticize. Criticize. So in the ABC, the holy ABC that Stephen shared last week, the C is about contribution. So if we're following the ABCs, the proper ABCs, so we're abiding, we're drawing close to God. We belong, we draw close to our church family. And now the time has come to actually contribute, to give of our time, our talents, our gifts. And Jonah was called to contribute. In fact, Jonah was called for the second time to contribute because he'd avoided it the first time. But he's called again. This is Jonah 3, 1 to 2 says this. Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you. Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord eventually and went to Nineveh. Now Nineveh was a very large city. It took 3 days to go through it. Jonah began by going a day's journey into the city, proclaiming 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. The Ninevites believed God. A fast was proclaimed and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. So to his credit, he did as God asked him. He started by contributing. God's gracious to give him a second chance. I love that God is the God of the first chance, second, third chance. But then something happened that Jonah hadn't planned on. You see, if you read between the lines, Jonah had run away because Nineveh was a pretty terrible place. Those of you that were in my preach a few weeks ago, I shared a little bit of it, all the PG version, but they did terrible, terrible things. They were an awful, violent city. From the king down, they were like next level brutal to people, seemingly almost for sport. It was like they were evil people. So Jonah avoided the first time because he knew how rotten they were. Now God tells them, go again. He goes, all right, fine. Understand something. Jonah is not going there to preach a message of salvation. He's preaching a message of doom. No, he is. Like, he thinks that this city deserves to be wrecked. And he's going to go and declare the judgment on them. And then he's probably waiting for, I don't know, fire and brimstone or something. I don't know. But I'm serious. You read it and you see this. But then what happened? Jonah 3, 6 to 10 says this. When Jonah's warning reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. This is the proclamation he issued in Nineveh. By the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let people or animals, herds or flocks, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. They were a violent city. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. When God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction that he had threatened. So the great city of Nineveh repented. And the word great city, if you actually look at the meaning of that, it actually talks about not just necessarily a big city. It talks about a city that was of significance to God. Because the people in it were significant to God. And you would think that Jonah should be like, oh, Jesus! Well, God! He hadn't come to Jesus yet, but like, Jehovah! You're so gracious, you're so loving. They're repenting, they're turning to you. I was a part to play in this incredible story. Oh God, you're so good. And if we truly contribute, that's what we should do. When we contribute something, when we see something, when we see God moving in us as a body, we should be like, celebrate this. This is amazing. What did Jonah do? He sulked. Jonah 4, 1 to 3. But to Jonah, this seemed very wrong, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord, isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? This is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew that you're a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, Lord, take away my life, for it's better for me to die than to live. Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about that myth tree that people climb up, right? Jonah hasn't just climbed up the myth tree. He's built a myth tree house, put a myth tree, a table there, and poured a cup of myth tea. I mean, he's taken it to the next level. In verse 9, a bit later, he actually says, quote, he says, I wish I was dead. That's his reaction to God's grace. Is that the reaction of a mature person? It's like a little child. He's so immature in that moment. See, God's heart as a father is to bring people to him. That the part that we play brings others to him. And Jonah had missed it, because for Jonah it was about what he thought. Because he thought he knew better than God. He thought the judgment was just, and he didn't think people deserved grace. How often do your kids think that they know better than you? I mean, I've got two boys. They chirp me. Just this last week, I won't tell you what happened. One of them, I asked something, they went, I don't think, I said, do it. I didn't do it. And then afterwards, I was able to explain why I'd said that thing. I didn't have time in the moment. And they were like, oh, I didn't understand. No. You thought you knew better than me, but you didn't. Because you don't have the full picture. Who has the full picture of what God's doing in his church? Only God. We have to trust in God. We have to grow into maturity. You see, because if we don't trust that God is doing something, then what do? We criticize. We don't contribute, we criticize. Rather than giving something, the only thing we actually give is our opinion. We criticize what people say and do. We criticize leaders for not leading or for leading badly. We say things like, oh, the church, it isn't welcoming enough, or the church doesn't pray enough, or the church isn't involved enough in community. The funny thing is this, if we belong, then who are we criticizing? Ourselves. So if we're going to criticize ourselves, what should we do? We should get off our bums and do something about it. So if you think the church isn't welcoming, you start by welcoming people into your home. If you think we don't pray enough, come to the prayer meetings. Start a prayer group. You think we don't do enough in the community? Well, if you see a need, go and fill it. And if there's fruit there, come and tell us and see if other people want to join you to whatever that is in the community, trying to bring the light of Jesus into that place. The point is this. Last week, Stephen said something very risky, but I'm going to say it again because I think it's true with a little bit of balance. He said that it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. Now, balance. It's good to ask your leaders and run things past them because they can give you wise counsel and because sometimes they do have a bit of a bigger picture of what's going on here. It's not nice to have to ask for forgiveness. So it's better to ask permission because then forgiveness isn't required. But the point is this. It's on each of us, every single one of us, to be the change we want to see. You see, God, as our Father, he wants each of us to grow up in his family. He doesn't want us to be the people to say, oh, I'm telling so-and-so they have to do it. You know, when I ask one of my boys to empty the dishwasher and it doesn't get done, and I go and say, why isn't it being done? Oh, well, I've already done it twice this week, so I asked the other boy, and I'm like, I don't care. I asked you. And God is asking you, every one of you, contribute. Because if you don't contribute, you know what's going to happen? You are going to fall into criticism. And that's not a healthy place to be. Now, it is true that just sometimes you might see something that does need adjusting. It's real. We don't get everything right. You know what the amazing thing is? If you see something that we're missing, that we're not getting quite right, then the best way to bring about change is just to contribute yourself. Don't criticize. Just contribute. It's the answer. So I want to come into land. We've had a quick look at this life of Jonah. We've had a quick look at his alternative ABCs. So instead of abide, belong, and contribute, he did avoid, backtrack, and criticize. The issue in Jonah's life wasn't God, wasn't leaders, wasn't anyone else. The issues were actually all Jonah. He was fighting against his dad. He knew what his father had asked of him. He knew it. He just struggled. It was a lack of maturity. He was just a child. And when your kid is being a toddler, you know, you do understand that they throw a tantrum because they only have the frame of reference of their own experience. But you expect them to grow up. By the time that they're old enough to be parents themselves, they should have grown out of those things. I'm going to be totally honest. I think sometimes we think that because we can hold down a job and because we can use nice long words and because, you know, we know how to change the tires on a car, we think we're grown up. I don't think we are. Really. I know for myself, and maybe I'm just preaching to myself here. Maybe none of you struggle with this, but there are times in my own life that I know that I think sometimes, you know, who do they think they are to say that? Or, you know, I'm not sure I would have done it that way. Or, you know, I'm not sure, I don't really know if God is asking me to do that. And ultimately, these are just the little kid in me fighting against what I know my dad has asked. It's to abide, belong, and contribute. When I'm in that space, I just pull myself to myself and I remember. God has asked me not to protect myself. God has asked me to cover others because that's what Jesus did. So we've spoken much on maturity and unity. Can I just get the worship band up? And I want to just finish with some verses from Philippians 2 that I think really speak about everything that we've been speaking about recently. Because I want us just for a moment to paint a picture. Just while I'm going to read these verses, but I just in your mind's eye, I want you to think of something. I want you to understand just how much God wants us to grow up and contribute to this beautiful family. How Jesus himself is preparing his bride. What would it look like if we were all looking out for each other above ourselves? What would it look like if we were all finding Jesus? We were all loving each other. If we're putting everyone's needs above our own, if we were willing giving up our own comfort for those around us, if we were so desperate that we would actually give up things of our own, no matter what the cost, just to see someone else walk into a measure of their calling, what would it look like? Don't you think that'd be beautiful? Philippians 2, 1-4 says this. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others.